Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about the battle between the light and the darkness. We're all familiar with this motif. We see it in different cultures. We see it in our stories. And we'd like to understand a bit better. Where did it come from? What is it meant for? And how can we use it in order to make our life better? Be with us, Tal, please. Yeah, in general, we see in our movies, culture, many reoccurring patterns that we already got used to. That if there's a story, there's a book, there's a movie, there are always the good guys, the bad guys. It's something that became rooted in our culture. And today we'd like to find out, is it random or is there a special reason why specifically these things became rooted in our culture, in our psychology? And one of the interesting things, one of the interesting recurring patterns, is the war between the light and the darkness, the good and the bad. Our children grow up listening to these stories. It's something that accompanies us all throughout life. So, according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, why is there this perception in mankind that there is a battle between light and darkness, good and bad? I'm not saying that it's true. Would it not exist without the wisdom of Kabbalah? I don't know. What, without reading about it in children's books about wars between the good and the bad, it doesn't exist in life without that? Doesn't it exist in nature between animals, plants, you name it, still vegetative, animate, people, all the levels of nature? Are they not in a war of survival, for survival? Yes, but there aren't always these two groups of the good and the bad. It's a bit more complicated. Wait a second. If we're talking about the still, the vegetative and the animate, there's no good or bad. They're the strong and the weak. And this is how it works. If we're talking about people, there too, because we're close to animals. We're worse than animals, actually. We have weapons and everything. And for some reason, we think that in society, there are no good or bad, light or darkness, but everyone's equal. Everyone has to be nice to each other. Where are you taking this from? Where can I see that in nature? If all in all we evolved from monkeys, and I see that between monkeys, there are terrible wars. So what's the problem? Why do we have to be any different? We're animals. And furthermore, with all of our wisdom, our force, our inventions, I see how we're in constant struggle. But would it be correct to categorize mankind into good and bad? Mankind. It's worse than any other animal. You're saying, like, mankind. Mankind is actually at the very bottom. So, war is something that exists in nature in general, in the still, vegetative, animate, everywhere. I understand the motive of the war. But what I want to understand is, how come we put in all of our stories, movies, and so on, that they're the good and the bad? That there's a war, this I understand. That there's a struggle, okay. But these classifications, where did we get this from? That they're the good and the bad? Because man, as opposed to animals, wants to deal with truth and false. He wants to invent by himself what good and bad is. And of course, it's all one big lie. But, you know, everyone says, I'm good. I want peace, and the others, they want war. They're evil. And this is what everyone thinks about everyone else. If you go to the UN, you'll see there are almost 200 countries there. So every country says, I am the only good country. Everyone else, they're terrible, they're evil, they're negative. And so what? What conclusion should we draw from this? That mankind is the worst? Because it sees things through extra egoistic eyes. Everyone thinks that they're right, that they're unique, positive, and everyone else, they're negative, they're inferior, and so on. No one can see others as greater or better than himself. That's impossible. And therefore, we, with all of our forces, with all the weapons that we have, with our ability to harm each other, we are the worst animals. So, I raise my children, I read them stories where there are good guys and bad guys. How can I give them a more correct perception of these things? The correct perception is that there is no worse animal than human beings. No animal simply kills any other animal just so, but only in order to eat it, because it has to. Man, without any need, just so, can kill everyone. So we're all bad. We and only we, human beings, are bad in all of nature. So who's good? The concept of good, it comes from some place. There are no good, but this is what we... Everyone's an egoist and wants only to his own benefit. But is there good in our world? There isn't. Can we bring about good? How? I don't know. As long as there's ego in the world, and everyone's an egoist, then depends at what cost, under what conditions, but eventually, everyone wants to kill the others. That's how it is. To harm the other. To eat the other. Doesn't matter how, but our ego will always aim us at harming others in order to gain something as a result. So, the definition of the good and the bad and the war between them and so on, it's all in the eyes of the viewer. Meaning, I'm always the good, the other is always the bad, because someone has to be the bad guy in the story. I'm always the light, he's always the darkness, and there is a conflict between us and the other guy. Thinks the exact opposite. So I tell my story from my perspective, and he does the same from his perspective. I understand. And so you're saying that as long as there's ego in the world and everyone's an egoist, there's no point in talking about good. Okay. Now, in this world where there's a war between the good and the bad, there's another standard according to which we measure things, which is truth and false. Do animals have this kind of discernment? No. Animals have only instincts. And we human beings, we have this concept of truth and false. That you determine that this is the truth, this is false, and you act accordingly. And for someone else, it's something else. Okay, could there be, because from what you're saying, I understand that there isn't, but I understand that in the world there is no truth or good. Is this correct? Yes. And there's no light. I don't know what you mean by light. There's evil, there are lies, there's darkness, and in parallel to that, in our fairy tales, we have the truth, light, good. Fairy tales are fairy tales, so you don't see that happening in light. No. Okay, but it exists in fairy tales, right? There are always the good guys, the bad guys, light, darkness, and so on. If it exists in our fairy tales, does it mean that at some point it can appear in our real life? Maybe, I don't know, but it's only a maybe. In the meantime, no one saw it, and according to our nature and from what we see around us, it's impossible. I don't see a person capable of being good. I don't know. I don't see it. If we're talking about the wisdom of Kabbalah, then that's something else. It's help that comes from above. But if we're talking in an ordinary, natural way, we live in a world that nothing good can come out of. Okay, so it won't happen. Impossible. Where can it come from? In a supernatural way. Can there be good? In a supernatural way, yes. So how does it work? What is this supernatural thing that can evoke good, or that in our world there is such an ability to awaken the force of good that doesn't exist in our world, but it's kind of a good force that you can draw, that you can awaken, and use it to bestow to the entire world. That's how it works. Where does it come from? From above. Above meaning what? From out of this world. I can bring a pipeline that will provide the force of good into this world, and anyone who will connect to this pipeline, or that this pipeline will connect to them, then this good force will influence that desire or object, doesn't matter how you call it, and will improve it. Improve it how? Will invert it from bad to good. A conduit of light. Dealing with the good and bad is something that's probably really rooted in us, and it doesn't exist in our consciousness just so. We still have to do lots of work to change from bad to good. We evolved from animals. Arya, Kabbalist from the Middle Ages, wrote about it, that from the still comes the vegetative, from the vegetative the animate, and from the animate the speaking. And so, there's no good in us. But there is this possibility of connecting with the force of good, and to start drawing it, embracing it, living with it. But for this we have to know how to use it. This force of good was revealed in ancient Babylon, where everyone started fighting with everyone, all the people that lived in Babylon back then, and then the force of good became revealed, meaning it's revealed only according to the great need that mankind feels, that it has to find some kind of force that'll save it. And this is how they discovered the force of good, and also the method of how to draw this force of good and to live in it. I want to ask in general about symbolic patterns that are common for everyone. How is it that there are these reoccurring patterns and that it's completely universal, that it exists in many cultures like light and darkness and many other things that repeat themselves in stories told by people all over the world? It's because in nature we have plus and minus, as if good and bad things, heat, cold, day, night, doesn't matter. We always have these two opposite forms, and accordingly, we project these opposite forms onto people's characters and to our relationships. But we have to understand that you can't have plus without minus or minus without plus, unless we put between them something that connects them correctly. And this is not simple. It's called resistance, collision between plus and minus, that if we put a resistor between them, then we can enjoy having both plus and minus, really on both sides of the resistor. And this way we can use the force of nature. Meaning, the main thing is to discover the right understanding of knowing how to approach and connect the different forces of nature. And then we'll see that none of them are redundant, but it all depends on our wisdom of connection. So if I understand correctly, the concept of the good and bad is something kind of childish, and we have to move on to something much more mature, that these forces exist in all of us and that we're all in this kind of struggle between the good and bad. Yeah. How would you define good? From what I see in nature, good is what helps all parts of nature to connect in a good, nice, and useful way, where each part benefits as a result and supplements the others. That's called the force of good. The force of evil or bad. That's the opposite. That separates everyone and puts everyone in collision, on a path of collision with everyone else. Is there a war between them? Between the force of good and evil? Of course. Because they have opposite goals. The force of good wants connection in order to get use out of the connection from the plus and minus, and the force of evil doesn't want connection, but to use others. But this way, it loses. In every war story, there's always someone who's the hero. That usually it seems that at first he goes through difficult states, but what makes him a hero is that he overcomes these difficult states and wins nonetheless. And eventually in every war story or every hero, real hero, has to fight two wars. There's the war that he fights with the forces that come against him, and there's the inner development of the hero, that in order to really win, he has to overcome these forces inside of him. Yeah, he has to organize his inner forces and traits in order to know how to correctly relate to the environmental conditions, and then he can defeat them. Can you explain? Man is a small world, and if he correctly organizes his inner battlefield, because as a small world, being a small world, he is also included of good and evil forces, good and bad forces, if he knows how to tie them together, how to direct them, then by the very same approach, he can also come out of himself and to fight what's around him for the better. Meaning that eventually he fights forces that do not want to be correctly connected, and he subjugates them in different ways, preferably in soft ways. He explains, he persuades them, shows them that otherwise for them it means death. And they too have to understand that connection is their only salvation and success. It's really interesting. And this is something that, this is a pattern that repeats itself in stories. Anthropologists really identify these stages of coming out, a kind of transformation that the hero goes through, and coming back where he shares all his insights, the new insights that he got. And many times the hero, he discovers a new world and he comes back to the old world, to his own world, and he has these two worlds that he has experienced. Where do these pattern stories come from? And this is something that exists all over the world. First of all, it's something that's rooted in man himself. That he dreams, he fantasizes these things because he really wants for this to happen, for it to be this way. Because according to our own rationale, we know that there can't be night without day and day without night. There has to be the right connection between the two, that the light shall shine as the darkness, that there can't be one without the other. And accordingly, all of these stories, fairy tales, it's not some grandma that invented it, but people with a scientific background, with the correct attitude to nature, with experience, experienced in seeing different phenomena in nature and so on. Yeah, also Plato talked about these concepts, meaning these are things that are rooted in us very deeply. And because we also have this expectation that maybe these stories will come true, can they come true? If something exists in us, it's in order for us to use it for the end goal. And also these tales, they exist in mankind in order to bring us to that very goal. And just to mention that these stories, these are the stories that accompany mankind throughout history. And eventually mankind always returns to them and wants for them to come true. And subconsciously, we live out these legends, and people develop, first and foremost, by them. This is very interesting. It means that these stories, they have a place in our development as human beings. Of course, you have that in every nation, culture, even nations and cultures that are as if disconnected from one another. But you can see parallel lines, stories about animals, people, heroes. It's all very similar, as if it came from, you know, some one general library. But it's really so, by the way. Previously you said that it's rooted in a person, that he dreams about being that hero that discovers a new world. Does every person have such a dream to be a hero that discovers a new world? Deep inside, yes, but he doesn't understand it and doesn't feel it. Can you explain this some more? Explain what? Can any person be a hero? Everyone, in one of their incarnations, will have to become a hero, because everyone will have to say that the world was created for me, and I have to turn the world for the better. And without me, it won't happen. The general correction, the final correction of the world will not happen without me. Isn't it a kind of megalomania? No. It's a necessity that even if a person doesn't want to, but he has to come to that. That what exactly? That the entire world depends on him, and that he knows, understands, and feels this responsibility. He knows where he has to be, and that without his correct contribution to the correction of the world will not reach its correction. And he has to be that sesame, that last sesame seed that you put on the scales. In the stories, what the hero gives others eventually is from the transformation that he went through, that world that he discovered, and he comes back and shares it with people. What is that transformation that we're supposed to go through? What change does our hero have to go through? He has to discover his responsibility, that he is responsible for the entire world, a very special attitude toward the world, that the entire world depends on him, and so he has no choice. He has to wake up, pull himself together, and take his fate and the fate of the entire world as one and the same. And then he'll see that he really has to devote himself to it. But devote what? What did he discover? To devote his desire and care, participation if necessary, to connect people, bring them together in a good and nice way, to teach people how to realize this good and beautiful legend. Only through their connection. What is this world that the hero discovers, this new world? It's simply a world where people are connected in a good and nice way, where they're all united. Why are you making a connection between the concepts of good and connection? Because we're all different, and until we find the correct, really ideal connection between us, there can't be good. Why? Because we will always want to use others, and there will always be wars, and you'll always have the good guys and the bad guys, and the disputes will only go and grow. But to understand that the good is something that you achieve through connection, this is the salvation. So who's really the hero? The one who calls out for connection. The one that calls out to the world to connect. Usually, in these stories, one of the things that happens is that the hero has this mentor, a teacher that helps him throughout the process. Is that also true? Yes. That in order to realize this ability, we need guidance. We need guidance. We need lots of strength. We need a system. We need an environment. We have to arrange many things in order to realize it. Previously, you said that the hero has to organize his inner forces, and only after he correctly organizes his inner forces does he know how to fight and win the war that he has to fight. Can you give me some key principle of how to organize my inner forces? You have to be ready and willing to connect with other people and to make a group out of them. That in this group, you care for its connection, for the connection between them, and this is your entire role. And what makes you a hero here? That you invest your entire self in it, in others. Yeah, for them to be connected. So the hero creates a correct kind of connection around himself. Right. It's not that he does inner things only with himself, but it's practically expressed in the connections that he makes between people around him and ever-growing circles. Yeah. Our time's up, but really, last question. This new world that this hero discovers, how's it really different from the old world? Because at the end, in all the stories and everything, he discovers that that world wasn't somewhere out there. But what makes that world really new? Only connection and the completion, the supplementation that you attain through the connection, where everyone feels that what I lack, he has and they have, and what I have, he needs and they lack, and so on. And then he feels that he's complete. The wholeness and perfection that you attain in the correct connection, this is the new world. Does our journey have a happy end? For sure. Evolution will bring us to that. But we can hasten the way. And let's hope that this talk has advanced us towards that too. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Tal. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.